Sometimes we make bad decisions, or less than optimal ones anyway, all of us do, especially when we're trying to deal with something complicated or involving a lot of choice. It would be good to have a bit of help, actually a bit of encouragement, that's what I really mean, to go in the right direction. And you could call this a nudge. It is called a nudge. And you need to know about it because it could save you money and it could keep you healthier. The power of the nudge is our topic in Riseside Economics today. And with me now is Professor Andrew Lee from the Australian National University. Hello, Andrew.
Good morning, Richard.
Now, the nudge, in simple terms, what is it?
Well, the basic idea of a nudge is that as individuals, we tend to make sort of systematic mistakes. We're too prone to stick to the status quo. We tend to go with defaults, and we make decisions based on limited information. These things are probably not particularly surprising to the average psychologist, but for economists, we've sort of been wrestling with trying to work out how to deal with this. We started off with a model, the traditional economics model is very much one of a rational individual who makes decisions based on perfect information. And the idea of nudging is, well, people are making decisions based on limited information, and maybe public policy can actually help them make better decisions.
All right, so we make hundreds of decisions a day, and some of them, most of them are fairly trivial, but some of them are important and will have an effect on our long-term futures.
That's absolutely right. So perhaps a classic example of a decision we don't spend enough time on is deciding how to invest our superannuation. Choosing what to do with your superannuation is plausibly more important than choosing which company to work for. But most of us give it very little thought. The typical worker in Australia is contributing the government-mandated 9% to superannuation. They're in their employer's default fund, and they haven't changed their portfolio choice within it. So the idea of nudging would perhaps be, well, We potentially ought to get people to contribute a little bit more to superannuation, so we could change the default contribution up from 9% up to 12%, but allow people to opt down if they like. We could nudge them into a low-fee index tracking fund rather than and allow them to choose a boutique fund if they wish to opt out. And we could also perhaps nudge them into an investment portfolio that was a little riskier when they were in their younger years, and then became more conservative in their older years. All of these nudges wouldn't be mandates, but they'd be simple defaults, recognising that most people don't change what's in place for their superannuation.
So how do these nudges work? Is it all about how the information, how the choices are presented?
Well, essentially, the idea of nudging is in part about changing defaults and partly also about giving better information to people. So, for example, if you had to design a cafeteria menu, you could do it in a couple of different ways. You could either put at the top of the school cafeteria menu the pies and sausage rolls, or you could put at the top of the menu the salad rolls and the bananas. And we know from a series of careful experiments by economists and psychologists that kids will eat more healthily if you place healthier foods at the top of the menu. In a sense, you have to choose some ordering for the menu. So why not make it the one which probably improves overall well-being?
Right. This is because of status quo bias, isn't it? This is a fairly well understood psychological bias, and it's why defaults are so important in this. And you could use it for something more stark than a tuck shop menu. I think the Spanish have a default where if you're a licensed motor vehicle driver, the default is that you will also be an organ donor. So you have to opt out of that.
That's absolutely right. And organ donation is a classic area in which people have been thinking hard about this. So only about a quarter of Australians are currently organ donors. But when you do surveys, you find when people are willing to think about the issue, a larger number of people than 25% are willing to donate their organs. So you could go the whole hog Spanish way, make the default that you contribute your organs. Or another suggestion that has been made in the nudge literature is that perhaps you should force people to make a choice on their driver's license form. So rather than just having a box saying, tick this if you want to donate your organs, you could have two boxes, yes, I will donate, or no, I won't donate, and force everyone to actually tick one of those two boxes. And that gets around the problem that a lot of people, when they're filling out their driver's license renewal, probably don't want to think about something as morbid as what will happen to their organs.
So this stuff is called, and actually by the way, we're talking more about organ donation on Life Matters next week, but this stuff is called, it's an awful term, Andrew, but this stuff is called choice architecture, isn't it?
It is a slightly ugly term, isn't it? But so the two academics best known for this is Chicago University academics Richard Thaler and Cass Sunstein. And they argue, yeah, we ought to be much more careful in thinking about how we set up choices. So, for example, another proposal we could put in place is to think about how people choose rental cars. At the moment, when I go onto the Avis or Hertz or Budget websites and I'm choosing a car, the features that I see about the car are how many bags it'll carry, how many doors it has, and how spunky the car looks. What I don't see is its fuel efficiency. And so, naturally, I have a tendency to choose a slightly bigger, spunkier car. We could simply mandate that all rental car companies put fuel efficiency standards onto their websites. If somebody wants to choose a gas guzzler, that's perfectly fine, but they ought to do it in a slightly more informed way. The architecture that structures their choice ought to be an architecture that encourages them to choose a slightly more fuel-efficient car.
On Life Matters today, my guest is Andrew Lee. He's Professor of Economics at the Australian National University, and we talk to him every couple of weeks in Riseside Economics. Today we're talking about the power of the nudge, an idea which has gained considerable traction in the United States, and I'll come back and ask Andrew a bit more about that later. But I'm wondering how transparent this needs to be. Does it work if you know you're being nudged?
Well, Richard, I think it does. I mean, I'm perfectly aware when I walk into cafeterias around ANU that they have chosen to put certain things up on the daily special board. It's probably the case, if I thought hard about it, that in some cases they're putting something up on the special board because they're trying to get rid of a bit of food out of the back of the restaurant, or because one chef is sick and the guy who's in today cooks different meals. But despite knowing all that, I'm still greatly inclined to choose the daily special. It's easy. It means that I can spend more time chatting with my friends. I don't have to worry very much about my eating decision. So you have to have some sort of choice architecture. Why not pick a choice architecture which is good for people? For example, with school cafeterias encouraging healthier choices. We could also try and improve the choice architecture around mobile phones. I think mobile phone plans in Australia are a bit of a disaster at the moment.
They're
just incredibly complex. So we could just say, look, you're welcome to be a mobile phone company in Australia and offer very, very complex plans. But all of you have to offer this basic plan, which is 300 minutes a month. And you have to offer a price for a mobile phone plan, which is just allows somebody to make 300 minutes of calls per month. And if someone wants to invest all the time picking the clever little plan, which has different discounts and rates, that's fine. But you've got to have a bog standard package, which allows people to make as simple a choice in phones as they can currently make in healthcare.
One of the things that I think is perhaps worth underlining is that there is always a choice for you, the consumer or citizen, in this, isn't there? You can always choose not to do it. You're not compelled by nudge. You're just encouraged.
That's right. And so Thaler and Sunstein refer to their nudging idea as libertarian paternalism. Libertarian, meaning that we try and keep choices wherever possible. We allow people to rent the gas guzzler, to get the complex mobile phone plan, to contribute small amounts to their superannuation. But it's paternalistic in the sense that we set up structures which improve lifetime well-being for the majority of people.
Some right-wing commentators do not like this idea at all.
I think it's the paternalistic side that they don't like about it. But, let's face it, there's governments are mandating things all over the place. Which would you rather, that a government forces people to contribute very, very high, everyone to contribute high amounts to superannuation, that it bans junk food in school cafeterias, or would you prefer that it's a government which gently nudges people in those directions while keeping choices open wherever possible?
How useful has the nudge been in trying to tackle the economic crisis in America? Because essentially, the nudge and the crisis emerged at around the same time.
That's right. So certainly there's a strong interest in nudging among White House economists. So the profiles of them that you read give a strong sense that these are guys who were raised in US economic schools at a time when behavioral economics was pretty standard. And so they don't begin with a model of thinking everyone must be a rational consumer. The idea of limited information and bounded rationality are just part of the way they think about policy making. I'm not sure it's come in to a vast extent in US policy, certainly around issues of default savings. That's probably been the most important area. And it may also be that it's going to come into areas around welfare reform. There's certainly welfare reforms where nudges could make people a lot better off.
Well, Cass Sunstein's now has a position in the administration, doesn't he? I think their internet czar or something like that. So you would expect there to be a bit more enthusiasm from the Obama White House than even so far. Can I ask you, Andrew, and we have to wrap this up, it is such a kind of elegant idea, but can you, apart from what lunches you choose, can you nudge yourself? Can you direct your own behaviour through nudging?
Well, I think you can. So one area in which this comes up is the good Andrew, bad Andrew problem. So good Andrew is me on a...
I'm intrigued about bad Andrew. Let's hear about him.
So bad Andrew is the Andrew who has a gambling problem. So I have a few drinks, I get a bit down, and I go to the local casino and blow my pay packet. But there's also good Andrew. So when I'm in a good mood, then I realise that this gambling problem really is hurting me and my family. So what I do is good Andrew turns up to the casino and says, look, could you please ban me from this casino? Take my photo, have my details, make sure when I've had a few drinks, I can't come into the casino. And many casinos in Australia will now allow individuals to ban themselves. And this actually recognises that sometimes we want to tie the hands of our future self. Good Andrew wants to tie bad Andrew's hands to ensure that bad Andrew doesn't reduce my lifetime well-being.
And on that arresting picture, I think we will wrap this up. Thank you very much for joining us today, Andrew.
Thanks, Richard.
Andrew Lee's a professor of economics at the ANU. And what do you think about this? Do you mind being nudged, or do you think it's got some merit? Would you be prepared, as Andrew was just explaining, to kind of nudge yourself, protect yourself against your own future behaviour? Drop us a line via the email or the guest book, or you can give us a ring on 02833 1430, the email and the guest book, of course, at the website abc.net.au/rn/lifematters. And coming up next on the show, Sexing Up Politics.